Welcome to the Radius Project, what happens when we explore the edges, paths, and landmarks of a city and meet our neighbors.
You got hair, we'll cut your hair. And if you ain't got no hair, we'll shave your head. And if you need some hair, we'll sew some hair on your head. Whatever you need, we got it for you.
The only thing that is going to make Hartford wholly successful, in my view, is a little less attention in the central district and a little bit more attention to our outer districts.
I lived in Hartford for 31 years. Well, I was raised in Mount Olive. My parents went here. My father used to be the old drummer here. My grandparents, I was born here.
We're finding unexpected stories close to places you might already know, mapping Hartford, Connecticut in a new way. I'm Jamil Ragland.
And I'm Julia Pistel. Jamil and I both live in Hartford. He lives in the North End and I live south of downtown.
In each episode, we'll look at a well-known landmark and then explore the half-mile radius around it.
We're searching for some new, or maybe some old, perspectives on our home, its beauties, its issues, and most importantly, its people. In this episode, we're going to visit Jamil's neighborhood.
Why Mount Olive was the point?
Yeah.
Where do you get that?
Do you want to answer that, Jamil?
I suggested Mount Olive as the point because I came here into the daycare when I was a kid. Right. And my son went through Mount Olive daycare. And I have several family members that come here for services on Sundays. I know that Mount Olive is a really important part of this community and that it has a lot of really strong history as well as an anchor in this part of the community. So when we were looking for different places to put as sites for the project, I made the suggestion that we should center Mount Olive as a place too, because it's such an important part of the community here and such an important part of the neighborhood here.
Oh, good, man. Good. Beautiful suggestions.
That is fantastic. I think you should come to one of our morning Sunday services. Mm-hmm. I think you would help your project.
Power and love.
Let me introduce you to my neighborhood, a place called Clay Arsenal. It's not a discrete geographical entity on a map, or a census tract, or a promise zone. My neighborhood is a community, made up of people who share with and love each other. Some of my neighbors have been in this community longer than I've been alive. They remember when the now thriving businesses were abandoned buildings. They had friends in the old Nelton Court projects. They were in the pews when Reverend Battles thundered in Mount Olive Church about racial justice and equality. Reverend Richard Battles was one of the early reverends of Mount Olive Church. He was also a civil rights leader during the civil rights movement. One of Reverend Battles' more famous acts was to bring 90 Connecticut residents down to Selma, Alabama, to march alongside Dr. Martin Luther King over voter registration rights in Alabama. But not only was he a leader in the civil rights movement, he was also a personal friend to Dr. King.
Reverend Battles traveled with Dr. King to Norway to accept the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964. How cool is that? But as large as his impact was nationally, Reverend Battles spent his time making this local church a vital support structure to the community. He converted a bowling alley into a daycare center and expanded the church's property to house a banquet facility. What had started as a 1917 meeting in the kitchen of just one member of the community had now become a crucial piece of Hartford history and the North End. So let's step inside.
We have a 700 member church here, so that speaks for itself right there alone.
We're a family, a big family. You know, not only in a religious sense, we love each other. It's a very loving atmosphere, you know, within the church and the community. That's how we're respected here.
We're a very giving church. We give back to the community what we give, what we're used to giving.
We don't just talk it, we walk it.
Go out in the neighborhood and let them know that we are there for them, and we try to get people to come. And you don't have to be perfect, you just got to be yourself.
My name is Dion Watkins. I'm 35 years old. I'm the proud pastor of Mount Olive Church Ministries right in the city of Hartford, Connecticut. Been here for about a year and 10 months, originally from Buffalo/Lackawanna, New York. But I'm happy to be in the Nutmeg State here in Connecticut. You know what? One of the most profound things that impressed me was when I hit the ground running, literally. I mean, I went to some of the worst neighborhoods here, And people were like, okay, where's the pastor at? And then, of course, I'm still fairly young, you know. And I'm like, I'm over here. And they were shocked that a minister, a pastor, you know, came from beyond the walls of the church and was on the street. And I didn't have my suit on. I had probably my Tim's, my jeans, you know, because Jesus met people where they were, you know. And that's the kind of ministry we bring here at Mount Olive. We have all kinds here, you know, and we believe that all of us need God. And so what impressed me the most is that people were receptive. They were almost hungry for somebody to come and show love to them. And so that was just impressive. So we're going to keep loving the hell out of people, you know, forever. We're going to keep giving back as long as I'm here, because that's what makes a big difference in the community.
Is in some ways it's your standard church. I mean, you wouldn't know from the outside that it is a place that has had such a huge impact on Hartford.
From the outside, Mount Olive is very clearly a church. You can see the stained glass windows when you come up to the front entrance, and the steeple is very prevalent as well. But when you enter into the building, there's a warm, cozy feeling that I've never experienced at other churches.
Yeah, and there are constantly people wandering on and off of those different stage platforms, you know, to collect the offering, to sing, to speak, to make announcements. It definitely feels like a living room or somewhere very cozy. And then one other thing that I think people should imagine when they're hearing this is the choir is so big. I mean, I'm sure there are some Sundays when there's as many people in the choir as there are sitting in the pews. Because there's at least 100 people up there just singing their hearts out like crazy.
When that room is full, it is packed. There were people in every pew. There were people along the walls. There were people moving up onto the stage because there were so many people there. There were people going up into the choir, choir members obviously, but people going to the choir because there were so many people in the room. And you get that feeling here because of just how the room feels. The room is kind of shaped kind of like a pentagon. And it feels like there are people at every single point all moving in towards the center. And it's just such an incredible feeling to be part of that. I want to talk to you about my neighbors. There's an older man who lives on Capon Street. I don't know his name, but I know him better than many other people I see more regularly. I used to walk up his street when I went to pick up my son, and we both walked back down together. He sat in a chair on the second floor, obscured by the blinds on his window, and would always say hello to me when I walked by. We talked to each other from 50 feet away, once a week, for 4 years. I learned about his children, his work, and his past. He learned about my son, my work, and what I hope for my future. One of my other neighbors has given me 2 sofas, a table, a washing machine, and more attention than I can rightly say I deserve. All she's asked for in exchange is that when I go to the Chinese takeout restaurant, I buy her an egg roll. I look forward to knocking on her door with my repayment in hand, ready to see what new and exciting hairstyle she has this week.
But neighbors aren't just people who live on your street. They're also the business owners who shape the landscape of a place. We stopped in at It's a G-Thing Barbershop on Main Street.
It's a G-Thing represents the idea of service through entrepreneurship. The owner, who goes by G, is passionate about the role his shop plays for men, especially black men.
My name is Liebert Fitzgerald Lester II. I'm the owner of It's a G-Thing, LLC, a barber salon, a beauty salon, a spa, training academy for the hair industry, and, you know, just an entrepreneur. When I was 13 years old, I was walking down the street in a garbage can. I saw a cord that was split, and it needed to be spliced together. And I always watched my father splice cords together. So what I did was I took it out. When I pulled it all the way out, it happened to be attached to a clipper. So I saw it. I said, I wasn't even thinking about the clipper. My concern was getting home. I wanted to get that black tape, splice that cord together, and then plug it in, make sure it worked. So I spliced it, did everything that I saw my father do, and I plugged it in, and I heard like a hmm, but the blade wasn't moving. And so then I don't know if you guys remember Crisco oil, but the lard, I went and got some of it, and I wiped it on the blade. And it was just there white. My mother calls me, so I go to see what my mother wants. And I hear this noise in the bathroom. K-k-k-k-k. Something is bouncing around. But the clipper has heated up, melted to lard, which has lubricated the blade. So now the blade is moving. So I grabbed the clip, and I was like, yeah, I fixed it. And so now I look at the piece that I spliced. So now I put the tape on it, and then I got it all taped up. I unplugged it. The clipper's warm. And so I'm like, what am I going to do with it? So I plug it back in. And because I had seven brothers, we didn't go to the barbershop that much. So what I did was I just touched my hair with the clippers. They said, ah! And it took out a chunk of hair. And so my heart just started racing because I said, my mother is going to kill me. I just bawled my head off. I just took it all off. I said, nobody's going to notice. So I took all the hair off. It wasn't totally bald, but I did the best that I could. And I took it off. So my mother asked me, she said, where you get a haircut from? Where you get money from? And I said, I did it myself. So I had the clippers in my pocket. I showed her. So she had me cut my brother's hair. And once I cut all the hair, I'm walking around. I got the clippers in my pocket. And I'm telling dudes, they said, what's that? I said, oh, my clipper. What you doing? I said, man, I'm a barber. And so they said, well, how much you charge? I said, $2. And so it's like, $2? And so one of the little kids told their mother, hey, mom, G charges $2 to cut hair. So she had three kids. She's like, you know, come cut these three boys. I'm going to give you $6. And I thought to myself, I said, well, I only cut one style. She said, I don't know. She said, just cut it off. So I got on them, man. I just started cutting. So I was cutting. And so then I became the $2 barber.
And G kept cutting through high school, through college at Morehouse. He opened his first shop in Hartford in 1995. He had been cutting hair in town for years, so he had no problem getting customers. In 2008, he upgraded and bought a new place. It took him a few years to rehab the old building.
So in building this facility here, I have 40 chairs, because this is actually the hairdresser, and the barber salon is actually in the back. And then I have a coffee bar downstairs, and I have a pedicure lounge upstairs, and then I have three massage rooms. And so when I built this place, I knew that I was going to use this as the platform to really grow my business. And what I mean by grow my business, I'm now accredited to teach barbering and cosmetology, aesthetics, and nails. So, you know, we're constantly trying to make an impact in the community. And me building this place here, it was to inspire the young brothers. Because, see, a lot of the young brothers, they're always looking at all of the so-called celebrities in the community are always guys who are doing something negative. But they could always turn and say, oh, I know G. You know, and I've seen little kids. They come, like they'll come in, you know, they're my little homies. Tell him, didn't you build this? And I see the look in their face. They're more excited than I am saying that I built something. And so I know that that kid is inspired to one day believe that he can build something himself. Well, you come here for me to talk junk to you. Remember, I'm mentoring you. I'm teaching you, like, one day you're going to be married, you're going to have a wife, you're not going to know what to do, but then you're going to go to your mental handbook that you got from the barber. Because, see, one thing we do here in the barbershop, we teach men how to be men. Because a lot of men, they don't know what it takes to truly be a man. So as a result, when you find a man who's trying to be a man and he's struggling, he must come to his barber. I mean, even my man, my buddy Otis here, Otis struggled as well. I coach Otis. You know, I coach Otis all the time. I coach
cut,
these guys.
Cut. You know, cut, man. Cut. Cut.
No, because Otis... What Otis wants
get off the soapbox, man. That's, no, that's enough
Otis,
of the ambient sound.
No, Otis, and the conversations that start in G's shop don't stop there. He started a monthly forum called the Barbershop Chronicles, where men and women come to the basement of the shop to talk about issues around relationships, gender, anything you talk to your barber about.
The night we were there, there were five men and one woman, and issues range from having children out of wedlock, to child support, to infidelity, to homosexuality, to the role of the father.
Environment that I was brought up in. So by being brought up in that environment, I needed to have some things in my life, which was another male role model, to see some things as I grew up that kind of made me say, hey, you know what, I don't want my family to be like this. So that then when I did have children and I did meet one woman, even though I had the propensity to want to see other women and do that, we all have that urge, I really did want to be there for that. Well, you know, I mean, you know, men are men. I mean, whatever. I mean, I understand that. But the thing about it is that, you know, I wanted to be there for my children and then that woman too. And I hate to say it, but I think this happens now more than ever. I think now men are there more for the children at times, even more than the woman, because they don't want those children to grow up with that pain of not having a father there.
You know, this is a very touchy subject right now for me, because my father was never in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I know him, mm-hmm. and just yesterday he just left to go back to Florida. He was ill, mm-hmm. you know, and I spoke with him this morning, and mm-hmm. he's having some heart issues. I love him, and I want to know as much as I can mm-hmm. about him and about his family. Especially genetic things that may travel through the bloodstream. That's very important for us. When I think about myself, this is my cousin Yusuf, and our upbringing and how we had to fend for ourselves, and mm-hmm. our mothers had to come to our aid for certain things. You know, growing up in Hartford, you know, it was either do or die. You know, either you're going to be a punk or you're not. You're just going to succumb, you know, to society, you know. And so, luckily, it was just two of us. We had friends that we grew up with through high school, middle school, all that. And we were able to, you know, personality-wise, educationally-wise, or even knuckle up to befriend people. So, you become a man early. You know, if you were born in the 60s and grew up in the 70s into today, you kind of grew up early if you didn't have your father.
Yes,
you
sir.
Know, and so
yes, sir.
And it's like, you
know, I raised two young men, and I think when my husband left, they was 15 and 5, and they never did time, and because I told them, you can go to jail if you want to, don't put my name on the visiting list because I ain't coming. And they knew I wasn't coming, and they really respect being around me, mm-hmm. well, one of them anyways. And my oldest son, you had to have that male talk with him. I had the male talk with him. Apparently it wasn't that good, because when it came time for his brother, he said, no, don't you do that. Don't you talk to him, I'll talk to him. So, but I got my point across. My son is 40. He tells me things that I told him back then, which I thought he wasn't listening, mm-hmm. but he was. And I feel good. He started out as a barber working with G. He now has his own salon. And so I think I did good being a single mother. I was just determined, this man absent is not going to change the way you're brought up. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, women can do it, so don't discredit us because there ain't a man around. I mean, we don't want to do it, but if you have to, you can do it without having a bunch of men running in and out of your house. My kids didn't need nobody to come in and take care of them because that was my job.
One of the men in the room was Eric Harrison. He's only been in Hartford for 2 months. But he heard about G through a friend.
First of all, you know, I'm from Chicago, so, you know, the barbershop is big time there. You know, I go to the barbershop for several things. Of course, number one, for a cut. Then secondly, just to blow off some steam. And third, to get into an argument. And I came here and all those things happened. The one thing that I can say about this event and this barbershop, I think that, number one, again, we cannot lose the fact of where this place is. You know, I have to give kudos to G, because he allowed it to stay where it is. He wanted to stay very near to where he grew up. He wanted to give back to all the people around. And it's very easy to maybe, well, it's not easy. I take that back. It's not easy to go and raise money and go help people that way. But he's actually doing it on an intellectual level in the barbershop, where people are having conversations and they can go back. Like tonight, one thing that came to me is, man, you know, I have to really check myself on some stuff, and I got to go back and be better. And that's kind of what happens in the barbershop too. You know, you walk out, you know, feeling empowered, and also you're kind of checking yourself. So that's one of the best things probably about this place and what he's doing, is that he's here and he's giving back to these people here and he's helping to make everybody better.
Hey, Kevin, can you rinse that young lady for me?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
When I step out of my apartment, what I encounter is the good news. I hear the men and women laughing loudly over bachata and reggaeton in the bodegas on the street corners. I smell the aroma of home cooking wafting across to me from hot pots. I see the construction crews working to reinvigorate and strengthen the community which exists here. I feel safe. I feel loved.
And there isn't a warmer, more inviting place than the Catholic Worker House on Clark Street. This place is a beacon for children and families in the neighborhood. But if you've ever been there, you don't call it Catholic Worker. You call it the Greenhouse. When we arrived, we opened the door, just as kids and families are invited to do every day. We walked up the stairs into delightful chaos. Little kids learning how to make soda bread. Littler kids doing art projects. Kids playing with a huge dollhouse. Teenagers sitting on the sofa rapping together. UConn students in the backyard playing 3-on-3.
And this is a typical Saturday.
Saturdays, we open up at around 9:30 and helpers start coming in. The kids try to come in at 9:30. We try to make them wait till 10.
That's Jackie Allen Dussault, one of the founders of the Hartford Catholic Worker.
Folks come in and start setting up for breakfast. We try to serve the kids something hot to eat, and then they can go and hang out in various parts of the space. Today we're going to be decorating gingerbread cookies. There's usually always a big Play-Doh operation going on, and lots of volunteers and mentors, and we just kind of try to build community and bring folks into a neighborhood that's incredibly segregated by race and class, and that's one of the best things we do, and it's a lot of fun, and everybody helps everybody else, and everyone learns from everybody else. It's a really nice mutual setup, and we're sort of trying to, from the ground up, build the kind of society that we want to live in, and we want our kids and our neighbors to grow up in.
Who wants to go on a mission?
Actually, go on to a mission.
I'll go on a mission.
Yeah.
Can you come right over here. How many cups of water are we?
Jackie.
Two.
Plastic bags. Like sandwich bags.
The Catholic Worker House is a community of lay Catholics and other folks that live together. We share resources. We have a commitment to nonviolence, and we live in community together, and we try to do the works of mercy on a daily basis, which is the part of the Bible that talks about give food to the poor, drink to the thirsty, visit the imprisoned, all those good things that help people have a better life that are having a hard time. So that's pretty much what we do. Pretty recently, a child from a family in a neighborhood that's been a part of our program for years was going through a very rough time. He's a teenager. You know, it's hard to be a teenage boy in this culture, you know, very hard. And he's a great kid. He was having huge issues with his family, and he was asked to leave his home and had nowhere to go. And my community really stepped up and said, we love this kid. We have to do something. So he's been living with us. And I'm so proud that everyone in my community immediately said, let's try to do this.
I am Kyrie Hamblin. I help run the Greenhouse, the Catholic Worker, on Saturdays, and I've been with them since I was a little boy. I'm 21. Well, when I was a child, this was a facility that I can come to just stay off the streets, to, you know, come here, and what I was lacking at home, I received here. I was going through some hard times at home, you know, my family was away in Massachusetts, and I was back and forth, so I said, Jack, listen, this is going on, I need help, and they just took me in. They didn't even think twice. It's always been a family environment. They've always been open arms. You know, they get to know the kids. They, you know, they sit down and you know, get to know what's going on at school, what's going on at home, how's everything going. You know, we actually had a child who, you know, he's from the neighborhood, and his father got shot. And the little boy is walking around sad, and we know this little boy. He's always, you know, running around happy, and so you know, us being who we are, we say, "What's going on?" He's just walking around sad, not crying at all, and we say, "What's going on?" And he goes, "My father got shot, and I'm sad." So, you know, we all sat there, we all gave him hugs, you know, made him laugh, you know, and did what you would expect the family to do, to cheer him up, you know what I mean? Because, you know, we're used to that, we know what's going on around here, and, you know, when we come here, you know, it's to just not focus on what's going on outside, but to, you know, be in that warmth that you feel when you walk inside here.
You know, when people are fed and clothed and happy and have beautiful things in their life, they're not desperate and afraid and, you know, do things to harm other people. And so I just feel like we're going about building a safer world in a totally wrong way. Because really, the more we come together as a community, the safer we are and the safer we can keep each other.
I'm Rosa Parks. I'm Rosa Parks. I'm Rosa Parks. Don't tell me move back, I won't go. Don't tell me move back, I said no. I'm Rosa Parks. I'm Rosa Parks.
I wonder if these kids know that their hero, Rosa Parks, visited a place somewhere right near where they are now sitting. I wonder if they know that Rosa Parks paid a visit to Mount Olive Church just around the corner.
Clay Arsenal and the North End are just names. The institutions that we've mentioned are just places. It's people who infuse those places with meaning, value, and love. The people here turned my neighborhood into a community. They took me in with open arms when I needed somewhere to go through life changes, a child, and a divorce. They are people just like you, with the same range of emotions and wants and needs as you. They've worked hard to make their community a welcoming place.
It was the morning before Thanksgiving when we last visited the church. I stopped in to see how the Mount Olive community was doing at their annual turkey drive.
Oh, you gonna take my voice?
I know, Mick White, and I'm here to give out the turkeys that we got for food share. And we got 34 turkeys to give out today. And we have all the assessment to go with the turkey. And that's what I'm here today for.
My name is Mrs. Grice.
Fanny Matheson.
Paulette O'Brady.
It's important to us and to me, to the church, because there are a lot of people out there who need help. That some of them don't have a food to put on their table for Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving is a day to give God thanks, no matter for health, strength, and even for the food that you have on your table.
Hi, my name is Dawn.
And Dawn, tell me exactly what you're doing here today.
Picking up my Thanksgiving turkey.
And I think there's a bunch of sides in there. Can you tell me what else is in there?
Actually, we have cranberry sauce, corn, yams, fried crispy onions, gravy mix.
Just reading right off the box.
I'm going to season it right. I'm going to pray on it, and I'm going to put the seasons in, and that's all I'm going to do, put it in the oven, cook it slow, make it just right, but I got to pray on it first.
I'm going to make a big sheet apple pie, and I'm going to do the collard greens.
What is the trick to perfect collard greens?
I cut them up very fine. I wash them with salt first, and then I rinse them off again, and I wash them again with salt. And I wash them about 5 times, and then I put the smoked meat into them, and then I cook them very slow. You can't cook food fast because you boil all the season out of them, so you got to cook it slow.
And who's coming over to your house for Thanksgiving this year?
Family, friends, nieces, nephews, sons, daughter-in-laws.
Actually, I'm going to my sister's, yes.
Do you have to do any cooking?
No, I don't. Just come to eat.
I have my daughter and I have my grandson. My husband, he passed away, so it's just all three of us.
Mm-hmm. How old is your grandson?
He'd be 12 Christmas Day.
Oh, my gosh. Are you guys planning a big Christmas birthday?
I hope so. If we be living, that'll be the blessing right there. If we be living to see.
Oh, till Christmas? Yeah, you're going to make it.
You never know.
And what are you thankful for this year?
Oh, boy.
thankful for everything. I'm thankful for all the beautiful blessings that God has rained down on me. I'm thankful that I'm able to cook this Thanksgiving dinner. I'm thankful to be here. I'm thankful for everything, for waking up this morning. I'm thankful to see another Thanksgiving. I'm thankful that I'm 5 months pregnant and I'll be a mother in another 4 months.
Congratulations.
So there's a lot of things that I'm thankful for.
Do you know if it's a boy or a girl yet?
It's a girl.
Oh, awesome. Do you have a name picked out?
Yep, Serenity Carlene Smith. And Carlene is my mother name. So I give her her middle name, my mother name.
I'm 82 years old, and so as my waking me up in the morning, and I'm still in my right mind, use of my limbs, I have a roof over my head, I have 10 great-grands, and I'm a grandmother. I have 6 children. I have a lot of friends. I am grateful. I have a wonderful pastor. I am grateful for everything.
It makes me feel good to see that we're helping people that's in need. You know, help people that's in need, so many people that need. And it doesn't make no difference what color we are. It doesn't make no difference because we all God children. You know, we don't have no favoritism or nothing. You got to come back again. Like tonight, oh, we having, what do you call the service tonight we having?
Tune up Tuesday.
It's going to be off the hook. Off the hook.
For an interactive map with photos from our interviews at and around Mount Olive Church, visit radiusproject.org. There you can hear our other episodes centered around Keeney Park, Park Street, Moscato's Bakery, and the Riverfront. I'm Julia Pistel.
And I'm Jamil Ragland. Our podcast is also produced by Jay Holt and Katie Tolarski. Thanks to Heather Brandon, Beth Messina, Shayna Sirik, Ryan Karen King, Rob Gabbery, Charlie Smart, and John Dankoski.
Radius is made possible by the Greater Hartford Arts Council and the City of Hartford Arts and Heritage Jobs Grant. Tang Sauce produced our theme music. For more info, go to radiusproject.org.
You know, I make my own money. I work for myself. I can say what I want to say because I have no boss. Because if I was cutting hair in my basement, you would still come. You can talk about the homeowners? What?
No, I'd probably go out to West Hartford.
Oh, no, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm going right back to West Farms.
You crazy, because they can't cut you like this. West Farms cannot cut your hair like this. You know, listen, they were charging you $90 at the Art of Shaving, and you weren't getting half of what I give you. How many people looked at you and thought you were interested
in
you?
Half.
Oh, what a lip. Well, you come here for me to talk junk to you. Remember, I'm mentoring you.